If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Welcome back to Pixel Sift, Radio Murdoch's weekly video game show. Each week we sift through the gaming news, pulling out all the nuggets of gaming gold. I'm Gianni, and this is episode 6, and I'm joined in the studios by my co-hosts, Mitch and Scott.
Hey.
Hey.
This week we're going to be talking all about fan backlash and what happens when you get your most passionate fans offside.
Fans are mad, yes. Outraged even, especially those of Payday 2.
Getting very mad about things that have been brought into games, changing the way that games have, you know, the game was previously being played. So it's all getting in there. What happens when you annoy the people who care most about your games? We're going to have a look about that. We're also going to be talking about how gamers identify with characters in game. Do you play games to be someone else, or do you take on a role? We are filling in all the stat points on that one there.
Humans have the capacity to take themselves somewhere other than where they are physically. We do it mentally all the time. But as a species, we've constantly developed new technologies to help us do it better.
That's Dr. Jim Blaskovich talking all about virtual reality and identity and gaming.
Classic Jim.
Jim, he's on the money there. First up, though, we're going to have, for some people around the world, this weekend is one of costumes, lollies, and spooky fun. Not to be left out, we talk about games that get in on the spirit of real-world events.
Yeah, so throughout the year, we all like to celebrate different events throughout the year and things like that, such as Halloween, and video game companies have been pretty much embracing that as much as we do.
So we'll be talking all about that and more coming up soon on Pixel Sift on RadioMurdoch.com and also on podcast.
Whether PC, handheld or console, Pixel Sift, Radio Murdoch.
First up, though, we are talking all about the seasonal events that you might find in games. Mitch, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so pretty much, Johnny, we've been having a look at seasonal events, and one passing by is actually Halloween, and we love to celebrate them. And video game companies have come to embrace that as well. So they deliver great holiday-specific content for their users. So with Halloween coming around, I thought it would be a great idea to take a look at some of the fun events that games have given us in the past and some that are coming around right now.
Sounds good. Yeah. It's a really good way for people who are playing your game to kind of have a bit of an interesting, different sort of content. It's really good if you're making a game where you want people to actually play your game for a specific time, because they can only get this during this amount of time frame. So I really like seasonal events in games. I'm a big MMO player from back in the day, so I am very big in on the seasonal events and collecting all the little trinkets and whatnot that you can get as part of that. I think they're really great, but the only thing is that you don't want to. There's always this fear of missing out.
That's true.
Don't want to get into it too late and not have enough time to earn all the things that you want.
Yeah.
Then you've got to wait until next year, or maybe next year they won't have it at all.
Exactly. So mostly the MMOs are great examples of this, because they have the ability to push live updates and have definite like things that players can enjoy, pretty much like, I guess, very topical, I think.
I think it's also like specific things that players can unlock, you know, special items, only Halloween specific, etc.
So a number of things. We got the of course WoW, Hollow's End. That's their in-game, I guess,
Halloween themed event.
Mm-hmm. This week, it's just pretty much, I guess, you can just earn treats and things in game. I don't think they do much for gameplay, but I think they are just
There is a boss, basically. There's an extra like boss that you can get, and he drops like specific items, and there'll be cosmetic items, which is interesting when we're talking a bit later on about identity and virtual reality and all that sort of things. It's all this extra stuff that you can add to your character, and it only comes around once a year. So if you miss it, you do miss out on it. I mean, there is a game. We haven't talked about it much, but you're going to be getting it on this weekend, aren't you, Mitch? This little one, you may not have heard of it before. What's the game that you're going to be playing this weekend for
the seasonal con?
Exactly. Destiny. Yeah. So Destiny's got a big...
Yeah, so they have something called Festival of the Night.
And they did a little bit of this last year as well.
They did a little bit of it last year, and it was very fun. I think we got like a small jack-o'-lantern head thing, and that made the Guardian experience creepy sounds while you played. But this year, they've stepped it up a notch. If you visit Tess in the tower, you get a certain amount of quests, and you get to unlock different masks. And things, and you have to unlock specific versions of them to be able to keep them.
And this, so, it's the way that they've set it up, they've kind of encouraged you to get into certain different aspects of the game as well.
Yes.
So, for example, you have to go and collect, you do trick-or-treating, and you do that by playing the multiplayer. And once you've, you know, trick-or-treated enough people, basically in the multiplayer you're shooting them, then you earn things that you can trade for other
But there are
items.
Also... there are also things that aren't just cosmetic. There are different buffs that you can get and debuffs from the specific candies, and I use air quotes. Mm-hmm. One of them increases reputation gain. One of them, I believe, increases a certain gun experience. I think some of them actually might hinder you as well, and then some of them do nothing.
Yeah, I think it's very cool when you've got content like this that comes out regularly. You can look forward to it. You can plan your time while you're doing it.
Yeah.
And having it change a little bit every year. The MMOs are always very big for this. I mean, Destiny kind of, I guess, falls into the MMO sort of category because it's people that play these games for long term. So they're going to be playing it through months and months and months. It's not like, you know, your latest blockbuster release where they're going to have one game and once you finish it, you're done. You move on to the next thing. But I mean, even the some of the multiplayer games, I know Call of Duty, they've included seasonal events.
I mean, while you know, seasonal events are a big part of the MMO calendar, I guess, as well as another one on top of that is Final Fantasy 14.
Yep.
They've got All Saints Awake coming this year. But also, like you said, your Battlefields and whatever, and even your smaller handheld devices. I mean, Angry Birds and, you know, Plants vs. Zombies, they heavily embrace the seasonal events.
Fallout Shelter, which is one of the new handheld sort of like games that's sort of a promo for the new Fallout game. They've got big on the Halloween-y sort of event-y stuff.
So I mean, it really makes sense for handheld devices as well, because they're smaller little games that you constantly kind of make tiny changes to, and they'll make you come back.
Yeah.
And it always works on me anyway. They suck at me in every time.
An interesting one now, a new player on the block, Rocket League. The car... soccer game has six new Halloween items. I believe there's a set of wheels and a couple of hats.
Cool.
Which is, if you're a fan of Team Fortress,
the best thing I think about these Halloween events, and not just Halloween, but seasonal as well, is that most of the time they are just extra things that you can get that are included. I mean, there are a few exceptions. Some of the Destiny stuff that comes out for Halloween this year you do need to pay for, but most of the content is just extra things you get for playing the game.
It's a little reward for your continuous kind of play of the game.
Yeah, it's not just you know, MMO games or multiplayer games as well. So for one of the big examples when we were looking at this story was in the Batman Arkham games, there is a character called Calendar Man, and he's one of the antagonists of Batman, and if you go back to him on specific days during the year, he actually says specific different things. So if you go on Christmas, if you go on Halloween, if you go, and he makes mentions, and in one of the most recent ones, if you go there on a particular day, he's actually gone and from the game after that point, because something in the plot actually happens, and then
I see
he's gone, and then if you go somewhere else, then it triggers another event in the game. And but people only find that by changing the clock on their Xboxes and PlayStations. And
I think from a game perspective, a gameplay perspective, it feels like these kind of things really make it feel like the game itself is evolving and it's a progressive world, which I think is what people are looking for nowadays. They don't want their game to just be static and sit there and just be the same for the rest of time. They want things to evolve, and they want a progressive universe. And I think this kind of thing really helps with that.
I think it does, as well. Having all the extra stuff that kind of keeps you in there and keeps you playing with other people, especially, you know, multiplayer content where you're going to have to be teaming up with your friends and getting in there to try and work towards something, and it's only a short amount of time to earn something a bit cool and a bit unique. As long as You know, it's not like, you know, we've got all this content where it's locked behind a price, which we're going to be talking about a little bit later, that was previously free. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, it becomes the season of charging more for your customers rather than a seasonal event. There's, you know, there's plenty of opportunities for them to do other interesting things in this. I really like it, to be honest. I think that would be that having games which have extra bits and pieces that unlock through time is cool. As long as there's often, you know, if you've got a chance to take part in it fully. So... sounds good. Let's get in on some more seasonal events. This season is season episode 6, actually, of Pixel Sift. That was a weird...
Season 1.
Season 1 of Pixel Sift, episode 6. Let's go into our next topic. You're listening to Pixel Sift on Radio Murdoch. Right, so we're having a look a bit at how people identify with the characters in games and how when you're playing a game, your identity actually... either becomes a part of the character you're playing or you can be playing as a character. There's always conversations about this when people are playing games, when they're talking about the negative roles of people taking on an identity in a game. Whenever there's a backlash of games doing some particular bad thing, people always say, oh, that's because someone is pretending to be, you know, X or Y. Mm. And I wanted to ask you guys what you thought about when you're playing games, how do you feel when you're playing your characters?
Well, I think it depends on game to game. You take different roles, you take different characters, so you take on, I guess, that kind of stance.
If you're playing Tomb Raider, do you think that you're Lara Croft, or are you just
absolutely
Lara Croft?
She's my spirit animal.
But you think you're a Tomb Raider, you know, you're not a warrior or a mage or something, you know. You take on the appropriate part that you're playing, I guess.
I think in a game such as... like the way you construct how your character appears and what they wear and what they use as equipment, I think it becomes very personal in the MMOs like WoW, and I'm going to talk about Destiny again because that's what I play a lot. The role as a hunter I play in Destiny, I'm very personally connected to, and I relate to that.
Again, because you take on that role and you play like that person. Mm-hmm. Like, if you didn't play like that character, you probably wouldn't choose that character or be very successful with that character.
But one of the first things you usually do when you start a game is usually...
like, who do I want to be?
You pick a character name.
Yeah.
Or, you know, even on your console, you can pick a gamer name or, you know, the mm-hmm. username that you're going to be playing with. And a big part of that is that, you know, you kind of become attached to the character that you are playing while you're playing a game. For example, there's always been talk... of the PlayStation Network being allowed to let you change your PlayStation Network ID. Now, just this week, they've talked about and they've sent out another thing saying, hey, would you like to change your PlayStation Network ID? And if the question was asked to me, the answer is yes.
You mean the PlayStation ID that I created when I was 17 in like 5 seconds?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love the chance to be able to update that.
Exactly. My one is just something I don't even use anymore at all. And I'm much a completionist and I like to have everything all the same. And I've got this one name for PlayStation ID and then everything else is the same. So if they'd let me change that, it would be good because my gamer name is pretty integral to when I'm playing games. I mean, it's not a huge thing, but I like being that username. And when people are playing games with me and across different games, they know that they're playing with me.
It's interesting that PSN was encouraging people not to want this because they wanted people to use their real names on PSN, which is something that came out with the PS4. So they were saying, you can use your PSN name or you can use your real name. And that was interesting to me. Hardly anybody has done it.
I think I've got one person who's got a real name on there.
Yeah.
In my list.
Well, you can absolutely request it from someone so they show up as their real name.
Yeah.
But people are not largely defaulting to it.
Well, you make friends with people online when you're playing these games as mm-hmm. well. And your character, especially, this is a multiplayer thing specifically. For example, if you're talking about Destiny, your character looks a particular way.
Yep.
And you identify as a particular gamer tag or username or PSN ID.
Exactly.
And when you go and play with other people, it doesn't matter what your real name is. That's who you are at
that's
the time.
That's true. Yep.
And that's the role that you're taking on, and your identity is that you are a guardian defending Earth from blah, 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 or, you know, you're a warrior defending Azeroth, or you're something else. And having this identity...
be separate from your own, I think, is what people value, yeah.
Yeah, but also it becomes a big part. I mean, think about how people are taking their character names and their usernames and becoming really famous for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Well,
yeah.
Think about some of the biggest names that we know about, like, for example, PewDiePie, for example. Like, he's known as mostly that. I don't even know what his real name
is. Yeah, I don't know what his real name is either.
Some guy from Europe.
Yeah.
And that's his identity when he's doing it. And it's like people who write books, You know, they put it under a pen name or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in a game, you're experiencing
Well, that being said, like, we were discussing, I think, a couple of months ago, my friends and I, would we wear a T-shirt with, like, our gamer tag on the back of it? Our PSN names on the back of it? And I said, absolutely. And one person in particular said no, because their PSN was made when they were a kid, and it's pretty hilarious. I'm not going to mention it now.
Also, like, depends what game you're playing.
That's true.
You're an antagonist, and you're not going to make friends.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone sees your gamertag, they're like, hey, it's that guy,
all
get
of a sudden
him.
You get a punch in the back of the head.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't want that. We don't want anyone having game-related violence. That's the worst thing. Yeah, I find whenever people are talking about identity and role-playing, especially when you think about games that are super deep, like your Skyrims, your Oblivions, your... all those sorts of things where people create a character. When you create a character in a game, where you get to customize the appearance, do you make them look like you, or you just make them look cool?
I mean, if possible, I think you go through that. And if you realize you haven't got much room to move, you kind of just go with whatever you want. Yeah. But I mean, I think creating that first profile, especially, let's say, Skyrim, is one I can kind of freshly remember, even though it was a little while ago. There's almost this like kind of anxiety, like, to creating a character, like, you're going to miss out on something else as well. Like, you've been given these choices, and it's such a hard choice. I always think, do a little bit of research as well, because I want to make sure I'm getting what I want.
Well, my first character in any game, usually I try and make look like me, except for the case in Destiny where I'm a robot.
Yeah.
But
what do you mean?
Like,
that looks like you. You're a robot.
Yeah, yeah, but like, I think if there's like serious customization, I would make it look like me. But my second character is usually completely different and usually female, because I just want to hear what the voice sounds like and how that character approaches the world. Yeah.
That's amazing. I do a very similar thing myself. Yeah. Just to see what, like, I go the completely opposite way just to see, you know, what the other side is like.
Yeah.
There's really interesting studies have been done when people who are going through sort of personal identity crises, or, you know, they're trying to redefine their identity. They say that often gaming actually helps with them role-playing a different identity before they assume it in their real life.
Well, it's a good That's amount interesting. Of, I mean, gaming in general, I feel, is a really nice escapism type thing. And as far as these roles and these online personas really being important to you, I don't exactly know what my point there was. It's good. It's escapism. I think it's very valid and important.
As Jim Blaskovich said, we've been doing it for a long time, and now we've got lots of different technologies in which we can
than ever.
Yeah,
you know, we can go online and control a completely different identity and stay with that for as long as we want. I'm not saying that's overly healthy, because, you know, it can be taken too far, but it's really good for
In a largely safe environment, I think. Like, I mean, you can't really get hurt online, which, that being said, I'm aware of cyberbullying, and I do acknowledge that is a problem.
You say largely safe,
but,
sure.
But, I mean, like, you're not going to get murdered by a computer.
Well, that was one of the criticisms as well when they were bringing in these real name policies.
Yeah.
Is that people often go to escape from current other things.
Exactly.
And people who are trying to target them will often target them at any method they will do.
Yeah.
You know? So by introducing policies where people had to, you know, marry up their real name and their username, it was causing issues for people.
Yeah.
It's, I think this whole thing about how you play games and what you do as a person is something that is
always developing. My personal belief is I don't think video games should be seen as a refuge and or a place to hide. I don't think that if you feel like you need to hide from life struggles online, I think you need to actually seek help. But
it, like, could be that people don't have any other options.
That's true.
They could be in a situation where they actually haven't got any other ways to do it, and they may be in something that's, you know, difficult and hard to deal with, and maybe games are the only escape they have, and that's what actually pulls them out of these things. So
yeah, but I feel like
hopefully you don't want people to be in that situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I know
not.
What you're trying to say, Mitch. You're right. Like, if somebody is in that kind of drastic situation, that they need kind of help, and they shouldn't just rely on games. But The fact is that
I like that it's an option, but I feel like people should be seeing it not necessarily as a refuge, but as a gateway to something better.
Sure.
Instead of maybe seeing it as a bunker, but more as a bridge to a new experience.
Yeah,
it could be a safe zone to socialize, or to break that kind of, mold of socializing.
Yeah, break the ice and maybe give you a bit of confidence to go and actually do change something in your life and go out and, you know, seek people who actually help you and benefit you and stay away from, you know, the influences in your life which negatively affect you. So, yeah, I think game identity is very, very interesting. I find it very fascinating. I'm similar to you. Like, I will personally, I'm when I'm picking characters, if I can't customize it completely myself to make it look like whatever, I'll often just go, oh, that one looks the best. I'll pick that. You know, like, I don't like the way that the male character looks, so I'll just pick the female character.
Right.
And it's just almost completely arbitrary between the way they do it. And when I'm playing the games, I guess it, yeah, as you said, it does depend on the way which game you're playing, but you often don't think of them as yourself. You're like, I'm just moving this dude around the screen, and, you know, but then other games you do, so.
Yeah, I think, like, but you eventually end up, if you invest enough time into something, you end up just relating to it, I think. Whether it's not, like, a specific vehicle in a game that you like a lot, or a gun, or, like, a sword that you've worked towards getting and spent a lot of time using.
The gear list that you've been working hard for.
So it's not necessarily, like, some games, it's not even tied to your character. It's like the all the characters look the same, but the gear they carry is different. For example, Minecraft. So, like, oh, I guess characters can look different in Minecraft. But, like, in GTA, for example, I feel a very strong connection to the vehicles that I drive in that game.
Yep.
So, it's just my character doesn't actually mean much, even though he does kind of look like me.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's interesting to see how people kind of express themselves in games as well. And either they do it through customization, or they play a character and they do a particular thing in a game. There's lots to talk about in this this particular topic about how people play their games and how they identify with characters in which they play. You can check out Pixel Sift and all the other great Radio Murdoch shows on www.radiomurdoch.com. Read blogs, check out the upcoming schedule, and listen back to previous shows. Radio Murdoch, the Student Wave. You are on Radio Murdoch, the Student Wave. This is Pixel Sift. We are at episode 6. Of our podcast. We are getting
very
excited.
Can you believe we're here? Episode 6.
I know. It's been quite out. six weeks since we started this. It's really exciting. We have a show every week on Thursday. You can listen to us live on radiomurdoch.com. You can also get us on the podcast as well. Finally, though, for our final topic today, we are going to be talking a little bit about when fans get mad.
Yeah, and the reason why we're discussing this today is that Payday 2, or the developer of Payday 2, Overkill Software, have just released an update called the Black Market Update, which is basically the beginning of microtransactions within the game, which is something they always, like, vowed they would never do. So there's been, as I said before, a huge community outrage. Basically, what's happening is, as being a heist-based game, you collect safes, and to open these safes, they're basically going to have to be charging you $2.49 to obtain the drill to open it. I mean, there are going to be chances to win the drills outside of you know, purchases, but not really.
This is a model that they've used quite a lot in Team Fortress 2.
Yep.
So they have chests and crates and things like that, and they actually sell the keys in which to. So you can have them. You can sell the crates on to other people if you're not interested in buying.
Yeah. So you can. That's interesting. Yeah. That's another thing, Tori, we could talk about. But what we're focusing on today is the fan backlash and the backpedal by the company, I believe.
I think it's basically what happened with this story was they went in to do an AMA, which is an Ask Me Anything on Reddit.
Yep.
And all the people were like, so why are you locking away things behind actually paying money for your game? We are super excited about your game. And now you're just kind of like, well, we need more cash from you people.
Yeah, we're going to do everything that we said we wouldn't do. And I can understand the outrage. These are obviously loyal fans.
There's a big problem when companies set themselves up and have said one thing and then go against it.
Yeah.
The other big backlash that I remember very clearly and was a big part of this was when people finally got to the end of Mass Effect 3. And Mass Effect is a game that had basically been pulling all of your choices that you'd been making across all different games, so 1, 2, and 3. All the decisions you'd made in that were supposed to accumulate in a completely different sort of ending.
Mm.
At the end of Mass Effect 3, was basically three choices, and it made no difference what you'd done up to that point. As soon as you'd reached the point in which you'd earned those three choices, one of those three choices were the ones that you had to pick, and people were not happy.
Well, no. I think were people not happy with the fact that the endings were necessarily bad, or the fact that there was not much variation between the three?
I think the problem that people had was both that they didn't love the endings.
Right,
the endings were they were kind of ambiguous, and they were sort of similar-ish. There was no real good way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But they also had no... It it was no bearing, basically. It meant that you'd, yeah. you've done all this work and you'd got to this point, and at the end, none of the choices you made had
because
mattered.
Because my problem is, I never had the pleasure of playing Mass Effect 3 yet, but my problem with it when I watched, because I was very curious at the backlash, I watched all three endings, and my issue was that they all largely looked the same, regardless of a bunch of characters that may or may not have lived.
Yeah, they're pretty similar. The big problem as well is they hype up throughout the whole game that you need to prepare and you need to work on these things and you need to make sure you do the right stuff. And for people who are real completionists of games who want to get everything and get the perfect score and get everything, it meant that everything that they worked on basically accounted for nothing. If someone put in 5 minutes, didn't worry about getting for galactic readiness or whatever, then it meant that they would still get the same three choices.
But see, right. there is a bit of a difference here in the backlash styles. I mean, Payday 2, kind of as a developer, they've gone against their wishes and promises to their fans. Whereas with Mass Effect 3, I mean, that feels like maybe a scripting and a writing problem. Like, they must have started off with the best of intentions for the story just kind of lost steam along the way, or maybe just not had the skills to really pull together such an amazing story in the way that they promised.
It was absolutely an ambitious process, and you're entirely right, Scott. These are two different levels of outrage that we need to be treating differently, I think. Yeah.
And that's fine. Like, I just wanted to make that distinction.
No, absolutely.
That, there's
but
a difference here.
In the end, from the backlash that everyone did, there was a change. Basically, there was a DLC package that came out after the fact, and it expanded out the options and sort of fleshed out the storyline. So it's basically the people who complained the loudest got what they wanted from these things. Yeah. And there was a example when Left 4 Dead came out. Everyone was super excited. It had been out for not that long, and then Valve announced that there was a sequel to be coming out. And everyone, when they started talking about the game originally, Valve was saying, we're going to expand this with multiplayer packs, and we're going to include more details so people can create their own maps.
It's going to have long legs.
Long legs. But basically what happened was they were like, actually, no, we're going to make a sequel straight away. So everyone got really mad about this, and they were big calls to boycott the game. People cancelled their orders. There was not any of these, the fans were up in arms about it. After the fact, when the Left 4 Dead 2 actually came out, Gabe Newell, who's the head of Valve, actually said that Left 4 Dead 2, for people who joined the boycott group on Steam, we looked at their pre-orders, and they're actually pre-ordering the product at a higher rate than Left 4 Dead 1 owners who weren't in the boycott.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because going back to the Payday 2 thing, so Overkill producer Almer Listo stated in response to the backlash that from an economical standpoint, completely based on statistics, we can already see that the black market update is working as we intended. So regardless of all the backlash, it's already paying off for them.
I think it's a problem.
So people are already paying for it.
It's already happened. It's already working.
Well, you see, here's the thing that's always going to be true. The most vocal people, no matter the minority, will be heard.
They're probably not representing the majority of
in a room of 1,000 quiet people, the one person that's yelling at the top of their lungs, you will notice them.
Yeah, sure. I mean, these boycotts and petitions do work. I mean, that Mass Effect ending changed. You were talking about the Xbox One redesign change. Yep. Dark Souls getting ported to PC. I mean, you're right. Even though these are small kind of minorities shouting out, sometimes things do happen. I mean, these are not common stories. This doesn't happen a lot.
No.
But if there's a strong enough outcry and coming from a good enough place, I think it works.
But do you find it's happening more often?
I mean, I don't follow outcries and backlashes enough to think that there's a spike or anything.
That's true.
But there's more games than ever, and there's more bigger, there's wider spread communities than ever. So sure, I mean, I guess so. There's going to be more people getting up in arms about it because there's more people, you know.
It's easier to get your
getting involved
thing out there now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you think about it, 10, 20 years ago, if you had a problem with a game, what would you do?
What are you going
to
do about it?
Write to a games magazine, I guess, or, you know, who would you do it? It's easier to get
but
it
now
on
you
Reddit
can,
now.
You can email the person that made it.
Or you could start a thread on Reddit like they did.
That's true.
And then just hijack it, and then your, your opposition to the decisions that they've been making is out in the open.
It is.
It's mob mentality.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Like, but yeah, is that it as a whole positive? I mean, I guess it is in the case of maybe the Xbox One incident, like E3 incident back in 2013, I believe.
Like, some good things come about these.
Yeah.
There are, the Xbox One's an interesting one as well. Yep. You know, there was lots of pros and cons for both. And, you know, some of the things that they had to drop because of it would have been great, but that's the way they decided to do the,
You know? I mean, what if they were the next revolutionary technologies and we just wanted to stay in the Stone Age? What if, I don't know, you know.
Yeah, you don't want to fight all progressions and things. I mean, some things are worth...
the right ones.
Yeah, you got to fight, and how do you decide which is the right ones? Maybe some people are getting up in arms about something you think would be great, and how do you start a counter-protest or anything like that? So it's a very complex issue, and we need to always keep an eye on these sort of things to see how people are reacting to the way that we are... you know, the things that we love to play and enjoy. That's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening to another episode of Pixel Sift. You can find our links to our website, and the page is www.radiomurdoch.com/pixelsift. Scott, where can people find us on social media?
They can find us at facebook.com/pixelsift or twitter.com/pixelsift.
We're actually also on Twitch as well. Ooh. You can go to twitch.tv/pixelsift. That's this week. You can see me just talking to a camera at the moment. That's all we've done.
Boring.
So far.
But we're planning to expand it out. Mitch, where can people go if they want to listen to other episodes of our show?
All right, check it out. So you can go to our Murdoch Radio page and to stream the episodes and subscribe to our podcast either on iTunes or using the RSS link on our page.
Thanks a lot.
Ciao.
Bye.
If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.